Hiram M. Chittenden Locks in Seattle turn 100 years old. We'll explore the past, present, and future in this place that shaped modern Seattle. It's Monday, July 3rd, and this is All Things Considered on 88.5 KNKX. We're live from the Ballard Locks. I'm Ed Ronco. Good afternoon. We're taking our show on the road today, broadcasting from Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. You'll hear the news from the Northwest, the nation, and the world. And throughout the afternoon, we're going to explore this place where the lakes meet the sea.
It's just like an oasis in the city. I mean, it just feels good when you walk in the gates.
We'll also look at how the construction of the locks more than a century ago forever changed this landscape and redefined life for a lot of people.
The village disappeared. They didn't care about the Native American, which was Duwamish.
An in-depth look at the Ballard Locks live throughout the afternoon. First, the news. All Things Considered is live this afternoon at the Ballard Locks for a special broadcast on the eve of the locks' centennial. The conversation about building these locks began in 1854. About 40 years later, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers established its official presence here. The Seattle District of the Army Corps runs this site, but is also responsible for a huge territory, 99,000 square miles in the Pacific Northwest. The locks keep them busy. You can hear folks behind us working the wall and yelling at boaters as they tie up and get ready to lock through, as they call it. But the mission goes far beyond that, and Colonel John Buck is in charge of that mission here in the Pacific Northwest. Joins me now live to explain a little more about the work you do. Good afternoon, Colonel Buck.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Let's begin with the basics. What is the Army Corps of Engineers?
Well, so it's an Army organization, but we're made up of a lot more than just the Army. For example, in my district, we have 820 employees. Of that, there's five Army officers, and the rest are all Department of the Army civilians. Mm-hmm. And so what we do in here in Seattle is we provide water resources and engineering solutions to the Pacific Northwest and ultimately the nation.
So the locks are probably one of the most visible parts of your mission, but it goes far beyond that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, great day to be here at the locks, but we do a lot of other things in the district across our boundaries. For example, close here to Seattle, we operate two projects, Mud Mountain Dam, Howard Hanson Dam, for flood risk management on the White and Green Rivers. We do hydroelectric power, so sustainable, emissions-free energy, mm-hmm. And we do those at three dams, all east of the Cascades. Mm-hmm. And our district goes all the way out into northwestern Montana.
And the hydropower that so much of the region, relies on, this is a very heavily hydropowered part of the country. The Army Corps has been around a long time. Can you talk a little bit about how the Army Corps has changed since the days of Hiram Chittenden when these locks were built 100 years ago?
In a lot of ways, the history of the Army Corps of Engineers is really the history of our nation. And it goes all the way back to 1802, when the nation's engineers came out of the Army. My alma mater, the United States Military Academy, West Point, was established under Thomas Jefferson in 1802, and it was where the nation trained its engineers. So as we expanded westward, Congress and the nation turned to the Army Corps to really provide those engineering services. And so early days here in the district, we started with, clearing and opening up the nation's waterways, where to today we do a lot of work for the Army and the Air Force, as well as the public, in terms of one of the big mission areas here in the district is environmental restoration.
And the mission, it does sound like there have been adjustments to the mission as you go from heading west and kind of clearing your way westward to more environmental stewardship and more kind of, I don't know if caution's the right word, about the environment around you and the world you're working in.
Well, we certainly focus on being environmentally sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to hear about the future of the locks in the program a little later. What do you think the next century holds for this place?
I would tell you the next century is bright. The men and women who work here at the locks every day are working really hard to keep this as a vital part of the city of Seattle and King County. It's a jewel of the city. We recognize that, and we're investing heavily in the future. And each and every day, we're out there doing projects to make this place vital for the next 100 years.
Have you ever thrown a 100th birthday party before?
No, I haven't. This is a first.
Nice. Colonel John Buck, Commander of the Seattle District of the Army Corps of Engineers, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
All right, thanks. Colonel John Buck runs the Seattle District for the Army Corps, and including the Ballard Locks.
Support for KNKX Weather comes from the law firm of Ryan Swanton in Cleveland.
I want to say, I don't even have a weather forecast in front of me right now. And that's because I have something much, much better sitting next to me, a special guest, Cliff Mass. Cliff, good afternoon. Cliff is the KNKX weather expert and a meteorologist and a professor of meteorology at the University of Washington. Talks to Bellamy Palethorpe every Friday. We get the treat of having you on a Monday, Cliff. And how you doing?
I'm great, and this is just phenomenal out here today.
We hit the weather jackpot. It's like room temperature out here. It's perfect.
And it's not going to rain for probably a week to 10 days.
Okay, so lots of folks want to know, because July 4th, the holiday coming up, lots of fireworks going on in the region. Seattle's are tomorrow. So what's in store for us?
Perfection. to put it in one word. Tomorrow, there may be a little bit of cloudiness in the morning. It'll burn off by 10 o'clock at the latest. Temperatures will surge to 75 to 80 tomorrow. It'll be clear skies at fireworks time. The weather will just be absolutely perfect everywhere over the Northwest.
Now, when the weather, like if you're a meteorologist and you see that the weather is just going to be perfect, do you just like cancel all of the things you have to do in your life and just go outside for the duration of that weather?
No, what we do is we look for the subtleties in the weather. Like, for instance, today, the clouds burnt off later over central Puget Sound than any other place. Why is that going on? Things like that. So, you know, we have our adventures. We just get to the, you know, one on the Richter scale of meteorology during this time of the year.
Excellent. Cliff Mass, thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You can hear Cliff Mass every Friday with our environment reporter, Bellamy Palethorpe, giving us a weekend forecast and explaining the mysteries of the skies. You're listening to All Things Considered on this Monday afternoon on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco, and we are live at the Ballard Locks in Seattle. There's a concert going on nearby, and we're broadcasting All Things Considered here because this place has a lot of stories. The link between the freshwaters of Lake Washington and Lake Union and the saltwater of Puget Sound was built 100 years ago. The creation of this whole Lake Washington ship canal system, including the Ballard Locks right behind me, had a profound impact on the future of this place, environmentally, economically, and geographically. But that impact was also felt by one Native American tribe in particular. 88.5's Ariel Van Cleef has that story.
The ship canal from Puget Sound to Lake Washington is considered to be an engineering marvel. And one necessary part of making that marvel a reality was creating the Montlake Cut. But that launched a domino effect. Creating the cut led to Lake Washington lowering by nearly 9 feet, which meant the Black River near Renton dried up. Nearly 300 Duwamish lived along that river.
The village disappeared.
That's Duwamish chairperson Cecile Hansen.
And the white people were so excited because when the water went down to the bare bones, there was fish jumping around and they were so excited. But they didn't care about the Native American, which was Duwamish.
One descendant of the Duwamish recounted the day to historians by saying, quote, "People came from miles around laughing and hollering and stuffing fish into gunny sacks." Hansen explains Duwamish means the people of the inside, and there was no place more inside than the Black River. It served as a key defensive position against other tribes and an abundant food source with salmon, crab, and wild game. James Rasmussen's ancestors called the Black River Village home for thousands of years. He says that river served another key purpose. It was the tribe's highway.
But without the river, there's no way that they could survive there. So they didn't have a whole lot of choice. They were just moved.
Finding a place to go was the next issue.
Understand that, you know, some of the first laws in the city of Seattle's Indian people were not only not welcome, Indian people could not own property. You know, after dark, if you're an Indian person, you had to be out of town. The only way we let you into town is if you actually have a job, somebody's hired you, or somebody will vouch for you.
By the early 1900s, many of the people native to the Puget Sound region had already gone to reservations created as part of treaty agreements between tribes and the federal government. Cole Thrush is an associate professor of history at the University of British Columbia. He explained that meant ship canal planners had less sympathy for the remaining people who would be displaced.
According to the thinking of many people that were in charge of these processes, all those people should really be there. They don't have a place in, quote, modern society.
Thrush is also the author of the book Native Seattle Histories from the Crossing Over Place. He said via Skype the creation of the locks could be considered the final blow to traditional living in the city.
I think in this time period, there's this sense of sort of modernism that the local doesn't matter. We want to create these big technological projects. And so there's no mention of Native people or really people in general.
James Rasmussen agrees. He says no one thought of the immediate effect on people. But there wasn't much consideration for the long-term ramifications either. Industrial pollution over decades has caused problems with water quality and salmon, which is a culturally significant fish for tribes. And these are things that are still problems today. Rasmussen says that absence of forethought at the time may have come from a lack of connection to the land.
It's like you moved into a very old house, which is, you know, City of Seattle on Elliott Bay. When you move into an old house, it's important to know the history of that house, you know? And that's, I think, what we're talking about here. This is the history of this old house.
And Rasmussen says he's grateful his people are still here to tell it. Ariel Van Cleve, 88.5 News.
4:51 on this Monday afternoon, and you're listening to a special edition of All Things Considered Live from the Ballard Locks. It has been a real joy to be with you on this Monday afternoon. Thanks for joining us. If you're at home or if you're here at the Ballard Locks, we've had a lot of people walking by and hanging out and enjoying this beautiful space. If you've never been here, take a stroll around. Come on down. It's 100 years old. It is still good looking, and it's a nice place to spend some time. You're listening to All Things Considered on 88.5 KNKX. Fresh Air is coming up next. It is 6:32.